Morning. Just as Brother Randy said, y'all have been a blessing to me just being here. I appreciate your patience. I'm definitely not a good preacher, but I think one thing that's lacking in this country in these last days is people that stand up for the truth and people that aren't afraid to say hard things that come from the Bible. A lot of preachers are shying away from that. And I don't think it really matters too much on how well a speaker is, as long as what they're getting is from the book and it's from the Lord. And that's all I'm trying to do here today. I'm not going to give you anything new that you haven't heard already. But as Christians, we need good reminders because we're very forgetful people. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, very forgetful. And that's why we got to read our Bible more than once, right? We need that constant reminder. Because we're prone to sin, we're prone to wander, and we need a correction course repeatedly. So if you would, turn to two places today, Old Testament and New Testament. Going to be in 2 Timothy chapter 2 first, just going to read a couple of verses there. And then we'll be in 1 Samuel chapter 17 as well. The majority of the message is going to come from 1 Samuel, but just going to give you a little bit of context of what I'm going to be preaching about here in 2 Timothy. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier." That last phrase there is what I really want you to take away from these verses that we just read, is that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. This is obviously Paul writing to the church, so it is doctrinally applied to us. When you get saved, you're placed in the Lord's army, you're supposed to be a soldier. You're placed in his army whether you like it or not, and you're supposed to fight. And we don't feel like fighting all the time, but every single day in our lives as Christians, from the moment that we open our eyes and gain consciousness, a battle starts. There's every single day is a battle, although every day may not feel like a battle. Every single day is a spiritual battle. If you go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel, back to 1 Samuel now. Every single day in our life is going to be a fight. It's going to be a battle. And there are going to be days when it feels like, you know, there was no fight at all. But it starts, you know, when your alarm clock goes off. And I have no business telling you when you're supposed to wake up in the morning. It's different for everybody. But when that alarm clock goes off, your first fight is snooze or get up. That's your first fight. That's your first fight of the day. It's a small one, just a small battle, but you can hit that snooze or you're going to wake up, and maybe before work you're supposed to spend a little time in the Bible or in prayer. Just a small little battle, right? In the morning. Or you could hit snooze three times and there goes 30 minutes that you should have been spending in prayer or in your Bible. Again, I don't know when you need to get up. I mean, it's different for everybody. But that's your first fight, right? Throughout the day, maybe another small battle comes along that maybe has to do with gluttony. Yeah, this is just random. Maybe you know you shouldn't be eating more than you're eating just because you're enjoying the food. And, you know, I'm guilty of this at times. But, you know, maybe you're supposed to be taking care of your health a little bit better. And the battle comes with, man, should I keep eating? Or I know I'm full. I know I've gotten what I needed. And I should stop. That's a small battle, right? A small fight. And most days are going to be just small fights, small battles. But every day, make no mistake, is a battle. Every day you're going to have to fight your flesh. And if you win one day, the next day, don't think your flesh is going to give up. It's going to fight you the very next day. And if you get one battle throughout the day, don't think that's it, that you're going to get any room. That flesh is going to fight you until the day you die. And David here in 1 Samuel, David is a soldier, and he's a very different soldier than what we're supposed to be today in the sense that his warfare was much different, right? David's warfare was mostly physical. He had physical enemies that he had to fight and kill. David was, you read in Chronicles where it says David was a bloody man of war. David was a man of war that shed much blood, and for that reason the Lord wouldn't let him build the temple, right? He had too much blood on his hands. But that's what God called David to do, is to fight and to kill enemies that were trying to take over his people, that were meaning his people harm. That was David's warfare. They sang songs about David, that David hath slain his 10,000s. That's not metaphorically speaking. That's not figuratively speaking. That's physically speaking. David has slain his 10,000s. David had much different warfare than we have. I'm just going to turn, you don't got to turn there, over to Ephesians real quick. Ephesians chapter 6. It says in verse 12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." So you see, our warfare is much different. But in comparison to the soldier that David was, and the examples that I want to give you in the soldier that David was, is that although our warfare was much different and there was different enemies that he was fighting than we're supposed to fight today, is that what we can gain from David is that the principle of the hearts is the same. That in the fact that we can please him who have chosen us to be a soldier. David pleased the Lord back in his time when he had to physically fight enemies. And you can please the Lord the same way with those same principles of the heart. David was said to be a man after God's own heart. The Lord said that himself. He's a man after mine own heart. So we can take those principles and we can use that in our warfare today. And what I want to do is just show you some of those examples that David sets for us way back then, and how to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. If you turn to, or if you're already there, 1 Samuel chapter 17, I'm just going to kind of be skipping through some of these verses to give us some context. But verse 1, it says, "Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shaalah, which be alongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shaalah and Azekah, and Ephesdemim." I'm not going to really pronounce that right, but in Samuel, the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. Let's jump down to verse 20. It says, "And David rose up early in the morning, and left the sheep with the keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army, and David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and he ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel," those words that he was saying of you in the previous verses, he's defying. In verse 10 it says, "And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day." So he's just defying the armies, he's defying God, and those are the words that David's hearing. And all, back in verse 24, "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, What have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard by which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul. And he sent for him. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine. Real encouragement there. To fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. That verse 36 there is where I'm going to draw most of my points here. And the first thing I want you to notice about David is that David was prepared for this fight. David didn't wake up in the morning and know that he's going to fight an 18-foot tall giant. That was not what David had planned for his day, I'm sure. But he was prepared for it. It says in verse 36, Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. So David has had tough fights before. This ain't his first tough fight. Obviously, this is probably the biggest fight he's ever had in his life. But yet he's still prepared for it. And David's not coming to this giant and getting victory over this giant on a whim. David had preparation in his life. And where did that preparation start? That preparation started back when he's tending his father's sheep. That's where David started preparing for the fight. He didn't know he was preparing for Goliath way back then. He didn't see Goliath down the road. But David started preparing while he was tending his father's sheep. That's where he started preparing. He was out there, you know, and one day he's saying, man, something's going to come after these sheep eventually, and I got to learn how to defend them. What am I going to do? What am I going to do if an animal comes after the sheep? Because I've seen it happen before. I've seen my father fend off animals before, but I need to learn how to do that myself. So David picks up a sling, and David grabs that sling and starts messing with that sling a little bit, and oh, that thing needs to be tightened a little bit. David gets just the right amount of tension on that sling, and then he starts looking for things to shoot out of that sling. Oh, there's some rocks. And David probably got to the point to where he can walk up to a brook and know exactly which rocks to pick out, which ones work, which ones would work the best out of that sling. And I can imagine David had his mom's stoveware on the fence line and some pottery set up. And he's out there just slinging rocks at those pots and pans and breaking that pottery and mom yelling at him and getting upset about it. But, you know, he probably started from about here to the pulpit and started hitting that stuff. And, man, got pretty good. Then he got a little bit further away, about to the wall, and started hitting it there. And man, he's keeping them sheep entertained out there. Them sheep are watching him and cheering him on. And David's out there day after day learning how to sling those rocks. And he knew which rocks went further and which ones had more impact effect. And David practiced and got pretty good at slinging those rocks out of his sling. And it got to the point where David's starting to get a little bit bored, maybe. Now, yeah, this was fun at the start, but now the sheep are bored and I'm bored too. And, man, I want a real fight. I want a real challenge. And if you read and you pay attention to David, man, that guy had a fire inside of him. David was the kind of guy that looked for a fight. And it's just a blessing that David was able to fight for the Lord, because then he chose the right fights. But man, David had something inside of him that just wanted excitement. He just wanted fights. So David's thinking to himself, man, I really wish something would try to take these sheep. Like, I don't wish the sheep harm, but I want to fight something. And before David knows it, this eerie feeling comes over him. He starts getting these chills in the back of his spine. And David's like, what is that? David looks off in the distance and there's some tall grass, and he sees something big moving through that grass. And David's, what is that? David starts getting excited. He's scared. His heart is pounding, but he's more excited than he is scared. And all of a sudden, he sees a mane of a lion coming through the top of that grass. And David says, oh boy, here it is. This is what I've been training for. I'm ready for this. And maybe his hand's shaking a little bit, but then he grips it tight, that sling tighter, and he says, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be good. And all of a sudden, that lion pounces out of that grass and goes running for that sheep, and David takes that sling and whew, lays that lion out. David comes over top of that lion, and that lion's still whimpering a little bit, and David finishes it off. Man, that was fun. That was a good fight. Man, I'm sure glad that I was practicing. Otherwise, I could have missed that shot, and he could have gotten off one of them sheep. Maybe a month down the road, that bear came along, and David was even more ready for that bear than he was for the lion. And David enjoyed that fight too. David enjoyed being out there defending those sheep. It wasn't boring for him. David was preparing for Goliath, and he didn't even know it. David was ready for whatever came at him. That Goliath could have been twice the size than he was. David still would have fought him. David was still prepared for it. Why? Because the Lord's not going to give you more than you can handle. I'm sure before that lion and that bear came along, it was probably a coyote or a fox or some smaller animal that David practiced on. The Lord's not going to give you a battle that you can't overcome. Now, the strength is in the Lord, but it's also, too, in the preparation. You know where confidence comes from? Confidence comes from experience. Now, I understand that your trust has to be in the Lord. You don't trust in yourself, but the Lord puts you through training so you can rely on that training. You know, a while ago, a few years ago, I went to get my certification to scuba dive, and there was a little swimming test. I'm not going to tell you the specifics because it's embarrassing, but I've never been a great swimmer. I mean, I wouldn't drown if you threw me in a pool, but I've never been a really good swimmer. I've never really learned the techniques of how to, you know, use your body in ways that you're not going to exhaust yourself. So I thought to myself, oh man, I read the test. I'm like, oh, piece of cake. I'll just wing it. Well, I show up, right, and there's 15 people taking the class, and you start out in a pool, and they're in like a big old warehouse, and then they eventually take you out into the ocean. But this test, they do three people at a time, and you got to swim a certain distance back and forth and do three laps, and I'm like watching three people go through. I'm like, oh, this looks pretty easy. Well, I get in the water, and it wasn't so easy. All of a sudden, I'm doggy paddling, and I'm going under and coming back up, and I'm swallowing water, and it's embarrassing. The other two guys are already finished and waiting on me. And it got to the point where they're kind of cheering me on, like, hey, you got this, like, you're good. It was embarrassing. It's embarrassing telling the story. It was more embarrassing experiencing it. But there was a shallow end, and you're not supposed to touch the shallow end. You know, you're not supposed to use it as support. But I did it like once or twice, and I think the instructor saw it. Maybe he didn't, but he let me get away with it. But the point is, I finally got and I touched the wall for the last time, and I could barely even climb out of the pool. I was so exhausted. I felt like every single muscle in my body was used and exhausted. And I climbed out of the pool, and I was trying to hide it, but I was gasping for air. And it took me a good 10 minutes to recover myself. You know what I was not? I was not prepared for that. But had I read that test and said, all right, you know what? I need to start swimming. I don't want to underestimate this thing. I need to start swimming. And, you know, watching videos on, you know, techniques and stuff like that. That way I know when I get to that pool, I see that pool and I'm like, okay, I can do this. I've done it before. And that experience will give you confidence. David had experience. And although he didn't know that he was going to face Goliath that day, he was still prepared for it. He had his trust in the Lord, and he knew how to use the weapon that God put in his hand. Do you know how to use the weapon that God's given you? You should know how to use this weapon. You should know every little thing about this weapon, right? You should know what verses to use when a certain temptation has come at you. You should know this weapon well enough that anything that comes through on your path, on your road, that through the power of God's words and his support, you can get through that fight. You can get through that battle. Because In every Christian's life, they're going to come across a giant. Every Christian's life, it's going to be a big fight. The small battles are day to day and they happen every single day, but every now and then a big giant's going to arise. Are you going to be prepared for that giant? Do you have a weapon? Do you know how to use that weapon to fight that giant? And you can't avoid him. He's in your path, and you've got two options. You can retreat, or you can fight. And or you can stand there and hope he's going to go away, but he's not going to. That giant is standing there, and he's defying you. He's defying the armies of the living God. What are you going to do about it? Well, if you don't have preparation, that's a bad time to fight him. But you know he's still going to be there. Goliath didn't care if the Israel was ready to fight him. He was there to take from them. He was there to kill them. He was there to do them harm. And it didn't matter if they were prepared or not. He wasn't going to show them any mercy. And when the world comes at you, and when troubles come at you, they're not going to take it easy on you. They're not going to care. They're not going to care how ill-prepared you are. They're coming to take from you. They're coming to hurt you. And you've got to be prepared for it. You see, David's giant's name was Goliath. I don't know what your giant's name is. Your giant's name could be financial trouble. It could be health problems. Your giant's name could be some sort of temptation, whether it be money or a lustful temptation. Whatever it is, you're going to meet a giant, and it's going to happen more than once, too, in your life. But that giant, you're going to have to face him eventually. And you've got two options, to either retreat or press through. But if you retreat and you come back, he's not going to be gone. He's still going to be there. You're still going to have to face him. David was prepared to face that giant. And he was prepared because he knew how to use the weapon that God put in his hand. The next thing I want you to notice about David is that he was persistent. In verse 36, it says, "Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them." So David hasn't even engaged in the fight yet, but yet he's certain he's going to take this thing down. Why? Because God's on his side. Nobody else was on his side. Nobody else was cheering David on. As a matter of fact, his brothers were angry at him. Like, "What are you doing here, you little runt? Go back to the sheep. Go back to tending the sheep. You don't belong out here." And David's like, "Well, you're not fighting him. What are you doing calling me a runt? You're not fighting him. Somebody's got to fight him. He's out here defying the armies of the living God. He's out here disrespecting our God. Somebody's got to fight him." And even his own king didn't believe in him. Let me try to find that verse and say, verse 33, "And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him." Can you imagine the encouragement? Or discouragement, rather. I mean, there's supposed to be encouragement, right? Here all these chickens are, cowering behind their barracks, while Goliath's out there challenging them, and somebody brave enough comes along, and you're like, "Oh, you ain't gonna be able to fight that guy." You'd think they'd encourage him on. Be like, "Oh, somebody wants to fight him. Thank God. Thank God it's not me. Go get him. You got this, buddy." And maybe behind their back, be like, "Oh, I don't think he's got it." But right, he had no encouragement, not from his family, not from his friends. You don't hear about John. Maybe he hasn't met Jonathan yet, but Jonathan was his best friend. Jonathan's not around. His own king doesn't believe in him. And that's how it's going to be sometimes. Sometimes there's going to be a crowd, and they're going to know about your fight. They're going to know about what you're going through. And they're going to be looking at it from the outside and saying, "What is this guy doing? Why isn't this guy just give in? Why is he fighting this thing? Why is he even struggling? Just let it go." And sometimes it's just going to be you and the Lord in that battle. And everyone from the outside is going to be thinking you're crazy. But you know what? If you know what is the right thing to do, you cannot let others hinder you from doing it. You've got to be persistent. You have to be persistent even when nobody's on your side. When everyone's wanting to watch you fail, you've got to be persistent. David has some persistence. And you know what I think David saw? I think David saw not only that giant in front of him, but he saw past that giant. and was already ready for the next fight. That giant was his biggest challenge yet. And man, I bet he can't even contain himself because he wants to fight this thing. It didn't matter to him if he died or not. What mattered to him is, if I go out dying, man, what a way to go out. At least I fought it. At least I gave it my all. I don't care what these other people say. They can hide back at the barracks. They can cower down. That's not going to be me. I'm going to fight this giant. And if there's one after that, I'm going to fight him. Persistence. You know, something, battles come one after another, and there's just no avoiding them. One thing that impresses me the most about my pastors, I don't know if y'all are familiar with them, but I grew up in Bible Baptist Church, and Dr. Ruttman and Brother Donovan and Brother Colvin, man, they're great preachers. They're great teachers. They're great men, and they have all these abilities that God has given them. Dr. Ruttman could, man, he could draw, he could paint, he could preach, he could sing. The guy was good at sports. I mean, the Lord just dumped some blessings on this guy. And he used all those talents for the Lord. But you know what impressed me the most about him was his faithfulness. You know what impressed me the most about my pastor now, Brother Donovan, Dr. Ruttman has gone home with the Lord, but is his faithfulness. I went to a PBI. I started out going when I was 16, but I ended up dropping out and going to Alaska for a year. I was supposed to come back and get into classes again, but it didn't happen. A lot of time passed, and I strayed for a little while, but then I came back to school, and recently I graduated last year, but now I'm 31 years old. But you know who didn't? Who was still there when I came back? Brother Donovan. He was still there. We do classes in this two-story building, and man, I remember being young, and Dr. Upman was still alive at that time and teaching. And every single day that I was there at class, they were there. There were some days that I got sick and I didn't show up, and you know, I would come back and they were still there. I come back 10 years later and Brother Donovan's still climbing up and down them stairs. He's not getting any younger. His health ain't getting any better. He hasn't defeated all of his enemies. He's getting attacked from every side. And in Ephesians it says, above all, taking the shield of faith, that you may be able to quench all the fiery darts that the devil throws at you. And I probably butchered that a little bit, but I think we're all familiar with that. The devil's going to keep throwing those darts and try to beat you down. He's going to keep trying to get you to lower that shield so he can get one dart through and get you. That's why he said that's why the Lord says, take the shield of faith. And the Lord will not use an unfaithful man. You see where the Lord comes to people in the Old Testament, in the Bible, he's always coming to somebody that's already busy. Somebody that's already doing something. Somebody that's already working and just keeping their hands busy and doing what they're supposed to be doing. The Lord comes to them. He ain't going to come to some lazy bum sitting on the couch not doing what they're supposed to be doing. The Lord will not use an unfaithful man. But that's what impresses me the most about my pastors is that, man, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes of what these pastors have to deal with. People are just trying to tear them down. They're protecting their flock. The devil's trying to get in and foul them up and foul their church up and cause harm. And man, that's got to get discouraging, especially when it's other Christians attacking them. It's their own, they're in this army, and this army is supposed to be fighting as a unit together, but yet people alongside of them are attacking them. They're attacking them from behind and from the side. And you know what? They're persistent enough to just keep going and doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're persistent enough to keep pursuing that giant, that fight ahead of them, although everyone alongside of them has forsaken them. But the Lord hasn't forsaken them. And you know what makes all of it worth keep going, is the purpose behind it, right? The last thing I want you to notice is that David was purposed. He was prepared, he was persistent, and he was purposed. In verse 36, it says, "Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." That's what mattered to David right there. If this giant wasn't disrespecting his God, maybe he wouldn't have even fought him. Maybe he would have gone back to tending the sheep. But David saw a purpose. What is this? Who does this guy think he is? Does he know our God? Has he seen what our God has done to the Egyptians, to the Amorites? Does he know? Do you know the miracles that our God? Who does this guy think he is talking about him like that? You know what? David had a purpose in his heart that is wrong, and it's not right for them to be talking about it. So I'm going to go take this guy out, talking about my God that way. David was purposed in his heart. And you know, the faithfulness, the sticking it outness, all of that means nothing if you don't have the right purpose. It sure is good to know that our purpose is found in Jesus Christ, that we can please Him who have chosen us to be a soldier. That's a purpose worth fighting for. And it's easy to lose sight of that sometimes, but man, when you remind yourself, there are times when David got down in his life, and sure, David made mistakes, he's human, but there are times when he got down in his life, but there's a part in the Bible that says David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. He reminded himself like, yeah, these troubles are not fun. What I'm going through is not fun. When Saul was after him to take his life, David encouraged himself in the Lord God. He reminded himself, you know what? There's a purpose for all this. I'm going to get back up. I'm going to keep fighting. I'm going to keep doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Even though the king's after me. Even though my own sons turned against his own son turned against him, Absalom, and tried to take the throne from him. And did take it from him. That's got to be pretty discouraging. But David was purposed in his heart to do the right thing. Can you imagine David losing purpose and giving up and coming up and getting to heaven and seeing the Lord, and the Lord saying, David, you almost had it. You almost had it, then you gave up. Look at all of this that I had waiting for you, that you lost. That wasn't David's story. David got up there and the Lord said, David, you're finally up here. Come here. Look, right here, when you fought that giant, when nobody else would, when you stood up for me, everyone else was watching them mock me and make fun of me, and you stood up for me, and I didn't even ask you to do that. You did that of your own volition. Good job, David. I'm proud of you. You know, when Saul was chasing after you and I gave you that opportunity to kill him while he was sleeping, and when he cut off his skirt and left it there just to let Saul know, like, hey, look, man, I could have killed you and I didn't. He said, that's the Lord's anointed. I ain't touching him. David had respect that the Lord anointed Saul even though that was his enemy. And the Lord says, David, that right there, what you did right there, that reminds me of my son, Jesus Christ. Because David is a strong type of Christ in the Bible. Good job, David. I didn't even ask you to do that. I wouldn't have even been mad at you if you had killed Saul. I was going to kill him anyway. But you showed restraint there. Now, aside from him cutting the skirt, you know, and leaving it and kind of putting that in Saul's face, that's a different story. But showing him mercy when you could have killed him, that reminds me of Jesus Christ. That reminds me of my son. David, you're a man after my own heart. Good job. That's the welcome David got when he got home. It sure is good to know that our purpose is not hopeless. You look at this world and what purpose do they have? There's a man by the name of Audie Murphy that fought in World War II. And this guy is one of the most discouraging stories that I've heard. He lied about his age to get into the army. He wanted to fight so bad in the war that he lied about his age. He got in. He was just a very brave man, became an excellent marksman, won all kinds of medals, including the Congressional Medal of Honor. And he did all of that, man, because he wanted to fight for his country. And man, that's braver than I would be. But he ends up dying and going to hell. He ended up in a bar drinking himself to death and dying and going to hell. After showing all that bravery, after lying about his age so he can fight for other people's freedom, ends up dying and going to hell. That's a sad story. It's a real sad story. You look at Alexander the Great. That was a wicked man. And he had the wrong purpose. But boy, that guy was brave. He might have been a little bit psychotic, but that guy would jump into the fight with his men when he didn't even have to. They were all dying to fight for him. Would jump up on ladders and climb up on castles and lead the charge. And look at all he accomplished. But what was the purpose behind that? He died and went to hell. There's a man by the name of Saint Simon Stylites. He was a monk, and he was probably a little bit insane too. But you know, the idea is that, man, he believed in his purpose, but it was just the wrong purpose. But what he would do is he wanted to separate himself and live in isolation. So what he did is he started out on a post 6 feet high, and all he would do is just sit on that post and pray and meditate and focus. That's some commitment. Cutting yourself off from all pleasures of life, from even interaction with other humans. And eventually he kept going higher and higher on those posts to where he reached up to 50 to 80 feet, would just sit on a post. They said the guy smelled awful. He looked terrible. He was determined. He was purposed. He had the wrong purpose, though. And he dies and goes to hell. Well, isn't it encouraging to know that we can please him who have chosen us to be a soldier? That our purpose is not in vain? That we have a true purpose worth fighting for? Endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ, and please him who have chosen us to be a good soldier. That's a real encouragement. When you're going through troubles, when there's a Goliath in front of you, you can know that you have purpose in fighting. And you can stick it out. And we have a great example in David on just how to do that.